In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss our takeaways from MicroConf 2014. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 181. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So we're still here in the Tropicana in Las Vegas. We've just wrapped up 2.5 hardcore days of speakers. There's 9 speakers, 11 attendee talks, 210 attendees this year. I had a great time. Pretty tired, but I think it was worth it.
Oh, it's totally worth it. I mean, it's just every year I come back and thinking to myself, you know, a little bit scared, just kind of like, oh, what are we going to do next year? We're going to be able to deliver because expectations have been so high and everyone comes up and says, oh, I love this conference. It was great. The next year comes along and it's just everyone, you get the exact same feedback. It's awesome to be able to kind of continuously do that year after year. But of course, it continues to set the bar that, you know, just at a really high level.
Right. Yeah, this is definitely the most exhausting, but probably the most fun 72 hours of my year. And I guess now we have two of them because Europe is in October. And actually, I guess we can announce that, huh? We just got confirmation from the hotel that MicroConf is going to be in Prague October 27th and 28th. It's a Monday and Tuesday. If you came to this MicroConf and you didn't get enough, you're a glutton for punishment, head over to microconfeurope.com. And we obviously are building that early bird mailing list.
I talked to a couple of people last night, and I told them when it was, and several of them were like, oh, I can't wait to go to that one, or, you know, I'm definitely going to look into that, because some of them are based over here, and we had a bunch of people who had gone to MicroConf Prague, and they actually didn't come to the one in Vegas in previous years, because they were wondering, they're like, is it really worth the flight over there? And then they went to Prague and said, oh, I'm totally going to the one in Vegas, and, you know, they've got the same thing over here, where, you know, I kind of explained to them, we're trying to replicate the exact same experience that they get here, so people don't say this MicroConf over here is better than that one, and we don't end up with disparities between them.
Well, my favorite part this year is, I think, when we stood up and asked for a show of hands and said, who here has been, you know, to at least one previous MicroConf? And it was somewhere in the 60-70% range, like a very high return rate. I think it speaks to how tightly knit the community feels here, because everybody, I feel like a lot of people know each other. I know there were a lot of first timers. We could see it on the, you know, we had a little ribbon on the badge, but the people who come back, it just builds that momentum and it makes you feel like you're coming back to hang out with a bunch of friends and talk about really interesting stuff that you can't talk about the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good point, because one of the things that people have told me kind of throughout the conference is that there's nobody who lives near them that's doing the same types of things. So they, in many ways, feel very isolated because they kind of feel like they're working in a vacuum. There's nobody around that they can really talk to. And MicroConf gives them that excuse to not only come to Vegas and, you know, hang out with a bunch of people, but to learn lots of things that are really going to help them with their business throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about it recently that like doubling down on community is something that we're diving into. And, you know, with Micropreneur Academy and now Founder Cafe and 2 MicroConfs in a year, that's where I think so much of the value is. And masterminds, you know, we've dove into that as well. So it makes natural sense that having a conference like this and getting everybody together in the same place is probably more valuable. I mean, like Ted said the first year, and like I say every year from the stage, is probably more valuable than the talks, is to just get together and share experiences and really get other people's insights into what you're up to.
I think that was probably one of my favorite parts of the conference, was just the fact that we were able to bring 210 people this year, and it didn't feel that large. I mean, there were a lot of people who said, oh, you know, how many people you have? And they hear 210, they're like, whoa, this is a lot more than I thought. It doesn't feel that big. And, you know, I think part of that was just the logistics of the room, because the room that we had this year was wider than it has been in years past. So I think that worked out really well. But the quality level of the attendees, I mean, I could probably have talked to anybody there, and I didn't get a chance to talk to everyone, but I talked to a lot of people, and it was just everyone had something to share that you could learn from. And that's a really cool experience. It doesn't matter who you talk to, you can learn something from them.
Yeah, I had 2 or 3 people come up and say, oh, the conference is smaller than it was last year. For whatever reason, whether it was the room size or just that they felt like they knew more people. But last year we did about 170 something, and this year we were at about 210. In terms of things that could go better or things that we would improve, I think the big thing that we ran into this year for the first time ever, surprisingly enough, was the Wi-Fi was really erratic. But we pay several thousand dollars, $3,000 or $4,000 every year to get custom Wi-Fi dropped in, and it's supposed to be able to support hundreds and hundreds of devices, and obviously people were getting kicked off, and it worked a good chunk of the time, but people were getting booted. So that was pretty disappointing, and we called Cox out several times to take a look at it, but it was erratic. That was probably my low point.
Yeah, I think that was probably the low point of the conference for me as well. It's just the Wi-Fi kept going up and down. And it was really nice to have a conference coordinator who could really just kind of actively go after that and say, hey, you guys really need to fix this, and call them and have them come back a couple of times. Because otherwise, we would have had to do it. And that kind of takes our focus away from the conference. And that can be tough for me, because you really want to be able to, you know, guide the conversations and talk with people and interact with them and make sure that the conference is going well and you don't have to deal with the infrastructure problems. It was great to have him be able to actively deal with that stuff while we're managing other things.
Yeah, that's been one of the real bonuses of being able to grow the conference a bit, is that we're able to afford a coordinator, and he has taken a huge amount of the work away from us. So that was super helpful. Thanks to Xander for doing that. So let's talk about some of the talks that impacted us. We obviously can't talk about all of them. There were, including attendee talks, which are shorter talks. They're about 12 minutes apiece. There were a total of 20 talks. There's several here that I wanted to bring up. The first one is your talk. You went on Monday morning. You talked about it. To be honest, you started talking, and you were talking about your Twitter strategy, about building your Twitter following. Then you had your long tail SEO strategy. And it felt, as you were going through, you said you had like five acts. And you got three acts in, and I was like, where is Mike going with this? You know, my inner monologue was like, I don't know what he's doing. And then you step through, and in the fifth act, you kind of did the big reveal. This is why all these graphs started going up at this time, because, basically that health problem that we'd actually talked about this, 20 episodes ago. And you're like, that health problem was basically fixed at this point, or we figured it out, and I started taking some medication. That brought it all together. And I got that same feedback from a number of people who were like, at first I was wondering where Mike was going with it. And then at the end, it really, had a real impact on people. And a lot of people were asking questions about how that felt, because you mentioned testosterone. It's a testosterone level, that was messed up. And I could already tell people were asking, how did you get tested? Did you go to a doctor? Did you do it yourself? There's obviously other folks in the audience who are struggling with similar types of stuff. So I think that was a big deal. How did you feel about it?
I thought the talk itself went really well. I mean, in years past, there have been certain parts of talks that I've given where, I feel, I'll say, a little disjointed, or I'm forgetful about the sorts of things that I was talking about. And this one was definitely longer than previous talks that I've done, but it all felt very, very smooth to me. I never felt at any point during the talk, and this one just, it seemed like it just flowed for me. And I got through it, and I had probably about 24 people come up to me afterwards and talk to me and ask me various questions about it, because at the end of the day, it wasn't necessarily about my particular health problem. The point that I wanted to raise is that if you're not taking care of yourself, it's very difficult to take care of other people, including your customers, your friends, your family. And obviously, family is part of why we do this. We want to be able to live a lifestyle that is beneficial to us and be able to spend that time with them. And if you're not doing things that you love, then kind of what's the point? But if you're not taking care of yourself, you can't put yourself in that position. And if you get into a situation where some of these things are affecting you, let's say, for example, you have some sort of a hormone imbalance, and it's affecting your work. Well, what do you do to get out of that? Well, you work more because you think that working more hours is going to help. And the fact is that it actually doesn't. It hurts you, because then you're working more hours, you're more tired, your mental energy drops, and it becomes the snowball effect where you're actually going in the wrong direction. You're working more to catch up, but it's actually hurting you more and you don't realize it. It's somebody pointed out to me, it's almost like the example of putting a frog in boiling water, and it's so hot the frog jumps out. But if you're sitting in that water and it slowly warms up over time, you can kill the frog and it'll just die because it doesn't realize that it's being boiled to death. And that's exactly the same position that I kind of ended up in. It was just things were going wrong, and it was slow enough that I didn't realize it. Like, if you break your leg, something went seriously wrong. But if you have some sort of hormone imbalance that takes place over time, and whether that's stress or your work is impacting you, you're not getting enough sleep at night, you're not exercising, they take a toll on you over time. And it's slow enough, you don't realize that how bad that problem is until something breaks, or something kind of snaps you out of it. And that was really the point that I wanted to make to people. And I heard a lot of people who were just having random conversations around talked about health issues. That was really, really awesome to see.
Yeah, and what was cool is you had a bunch of graphs, and you had a graph of the number of Twitter followers, and you had a graph about the number of, I think it was unique visits to your website based on, you know, organic traffic. And they basically all were bumping along the bottom. And then on a certain date, boom, they all spiked up. And you had like two or three of those. And you put a big red arrow and the dates were all basically within a month of each other. And that was the month that you figured this whole thing out. I don't think that's a coincidence. I mean, that's what you're pointing out, right? It's like your motivation before that was very low and you just didn't want to work on things. And then when you turn it around, it's a stark contrast. This is self-care, you know, it's like caring for yourself and understanding when you have, when you're at lows and why those, how long those lows are happening and why they're happening. And if it's going on longer than a month or two, then there's probably something that needs to be fixed. The next talk, Sherry's Walling's talk, my wife's talk, piggybacked really well on that. And she spent a full 40 minutes diving into the various causes of it and how to have time in and then how to have time out from work. And time in includes things like retreats, mastermind groups. It's diving into your work, but organizing it and getting support, you know, organizing the thoughts in your head around it. And then the time out is things that are away from work. And those are, she had a bunch of them. It was like service, travel, vacation time with family, time away from screens. That was a big one, right? Like screen-free Sundays. Yeah, there was a lot in that. I actually want to go back and watch the video again and kind of take some notes. Yeah, I'm looking forward to pulling some more action items out of her talk.
I think what was really cool about her talk was one of the things she did was extremely simple. It was just she did this very simple breathing exercise. And I took a glance around in the middle of it just to kind of see like who was participating in it. And everybody was. And it was so simple and it was so short to do. It didn't take any time or effort to do. And it is just, it worked. I mean, people felt better. I felt better afterwards. And it was just so simple. And it's something that you could do at your desk. It's just you breathe in and out a couple of times, a very regimented pace, and, you know, just really concentrate on your breathing. And it's just a very simple hack. It's a body hack is really what it comes down to. And it just works. And I think that that's not something that people really think about while they're sitting there and saying, oh, I've got to wrestle with this problem and I'm all stressed out. And just take a step back and breathe a little bit and things get better.
Yeah. And I saw a tweet from a MicroConf attendee returning home who said, I used the Zen Founders deep breathing on the way home because I'm a nervous flyer and it got me through the flight.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I think what might be the most memorable talk of this year was a Jesse Meekum's talk. Jesse is the founder of youneedabudget.com, YNAB, YNAB. And it's downloadable desktop software. It's budgeting software. So it's something maybe similar to like a Quicken or something. He nailed it. Like he had the mix of humor, interesting story. He's at 27 employees now. And I think that the title of the talk included the number $4 million in revenue. And I don't know if that's this year or you know, what year it was, but obviously a very large company that's selling, you know, $60 one-time fee software to consumers. But what was cool is he went through his first 5 years. I think he's been in business 9 years and he just went from day one and told all the stories and the foibles and how he had no idea what he was doing. There was no Hacker News or Quora. He didn't listen to any gurus, no methodology. He just stumbled his way through and had some really actionable takeaways for people who are hesitating or who feel like they need to read one more book to do it. Because his whole point was to like start doing stuff. And as simple as that sounds, he just had story after story, example after example of him doing stuff, it not working, but as he iterated, it grew. And he showed that, you know, they doubled revenue from 200 to 400 to 800 by doing little tips and tricks. So his was definitely one of my favorites.
It was actually really interesting to see that his first product was not a piece of software. It was an Excel spreadsheet that he was selling. That's kind of a proof of concept, but it was just really cool to see that like, he made all these mistakes and did all these things that you would look at that and say, oh, that'll never work. And it's like, it did work because people actually had that problem and were willing to pay for it. And as you said, over time, he's iterated and done better. And now he's up to $4 million in revenue and 27 employees. And you don't get that overnight. And it did take 9 years to get there, but he's there right now. And it's awesome to see that path that he's gone through. And you look at it and say, oh, well, yeah, sure, he's done this overnight. And it's like, no, there was this long process behind it. And it just takes time and effort and just continuous iteration.
So I closed out the first day talking about Drip. The title was something like how I launched a SaaS app to $7,000 in recurring revenue in month one. And it was the story of Drip, how I validated the idea and then the slow launch that we did and user onboarding and that kind of stuff. And I felt good about the talk. I think after last year's talk, which is how I grew Hittail, I don't know if this was as good a story, right? Because it's just the story's not done yet. But I did get positive feedback on the onboarding part specifically, because I really walked through how we onboard people with Drip, and it's a high performing onboarding process, and we spent a lot of time on it. So that, I hope, is a big takeaway that people took from the talk.
I think one takeaway that maybe you kind of mentally gloss over, because to you it's not necessarily relevant, but I think that a lot of other people see it as relevant, is that at MicroConf, the kind of experiences that you see and hear, it's not just the success stories, but it's also the failures and the things that you get into something and you make a mistake and then you go back and say, okay, well, what can I do differently? And the one slide that really sticks out in my mind is you had a slide where there was this road and there's this giant boulder in the middle of the road. And you got to a point where it's just, you're trying to move forward and you couldn't. There's this giant roadblock and you had to back up and say, okay, well, now what? How do I get through this roadblock? And the answer is you don't in some cases. The answer is go in a different direction, because that's just not possible. You can't go in that direction because you're not going to be able to. It's going to take too long. It takes too much effort and resources that you simply don't have right now. That definitely impacted a lot of people, because they look at that and they say, hey, you know, even Rob Walling makes mistakes. And people were kind of talking about this quote, which was, don't feel bad about what you're doing, because what you're doing is you're comparing your daily life against other people's highlight reels. And that's so true. And it's really nice to see people sharing not just the successes, but also the failures and the mistakes made along the way, so that other people can learn from them and realize that everyone makes mistakes. Everyone has these times where they just can't proceed forward. And you have to take a step back and you have to reevaluate. And sometimes reevaluating means going in a different direction.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Several people came up and mentioned that. I was kind of deliberate about it in the talk, but I realized there were even more mistakes I could have called out, and I think that would have been beneficial. But I think I had two or three foibles that I did during that launch and during building Drip that I called out. The particular mistakes aren't important, but you're right. It was just so people could see, oh, he took missteps, and how did you handle them? Because we're all going to take missteps, and it'd be nice to know how to do it. The other thing that I called out that folks mentioned was, I talked about a couple points where I was really disappointed. I was really anxious. I was depressed. I just felt like crap because something didn't go right. And we spent a month doing something and I felt like we're not moving forward. And to stand up on the stage and said, this part really sucked. I saw tweets about that. People saying like, wow, you know, this now I don't feel bad when that happens on my product, because I know that basically we all go through this.
What did you think of Annie's talk?
So Annie Cushing is a Google Analytics genius, I'll say. She basically dropped so much knowledge in the first 120 seconds of her talk that it made me embarrassed to think that I've ever logged into a Google Analytics account. Like, she knows Google Analytics better than anyone I've ever seen. So if you haven't heard of her, you can go to annielytics.com. And that's just what she does. That's all she does. 40, 50 hours a week is consult and build custom reports. And just, she knows it in and out better. She knows every little nook and cranny and all the weird bugs and errors that I would look at and say, oh, that's an anomaly. But she'll just call like, oh, there's four errors in this report. And here's how you get around them. And I loved it. I mean, I think she had 9 or 10 questions that every entrepreneur should be asking their analytics. I mean, it wasn't the obvious things, right? It wasn't like, oh, how many visits do I get? It was like digging in and looking at like, oh, which competitors might be spying on you, or which of your products is the most successful? I mean, she was just pulling data out of there that I didn't even know, you know, where data would be.
And then there were other things you talked about, like last click attribution, which, if you're not familiar with what that is, it is, how is it that somebody clicks on something and then it buys your product? You know, where is the credit for that click going to? And it's not necessarily actually where they last clicked, because maybe they came in through a social network or a newsletter or something along those lines, and maybe they went to your website and then there was a direct link back to your website and then they bought something. It's like, well, where does that credit go? And really it gets distributed, but it can be very difficult to find out some of that information. And she shed a lot of light onto that process and how you should really be thinking about it. And I thought that was really cool. It was nice to see her dig into Google Analytics, because I think so many people use it and it's just so hard to understand if you're not an expert in it. It was nice for her to share that kind of knowledge with everybody. And there was a huge amount of response from that. And I remember talking to somebody who was sitting in the back of the room. They commented to me, oh yeah, in the middle of her talk, there were probably 30 or 40 people who were rewriting some of their Google Analytics campaigns and custom reports just based on the stuff that she was saying. So I don't know if Google tracks that from a single IP, but I'm wondering if it got flagged for something.
Yeah, I think she probably combined like a 4 or 8 hour workshop into like a 40 minute talk. I mean, that's basically what it felt like. I think another notable one was Brennan Dunn, and his talk was six tricks that helped me triple my SaaS growth rate. And he talked about reducing churn through some targeted emails and even personal emails. He'll turn off his autoresponder sequence inside his trials, and he'll just send personal one-on-one emails from him to people who are using it. And he has, you know, the whole required text field when you cancel, because he really wants to find out why you canceled. And there were four other tricks, and obviously it's helped him grow PlanScope. Almost everyone in the audience could probably take something away from his talk.
The really interesting part about his talk was the six different things that he had were actually at six different parts of the interactions with customers. So he had one trick that he did up front and another trick in the middle, and basically ran the gamut through all these different scenarios. So it wasn't like there was one part of his funnel where he did two or three different things and made things better. It was just at six different points throughout the sales process, he did six different things. And overall, it grew his onboarding rate and his conversion rate by something like 30%, 33%, I think he said. It was really cool to see the multiplicative effect of implementing all of those different things.
And then sprinkled throughout the days, we had sessions of attendee talks. We had a really good showing. We had 42 attendee talks submitted this year, and we only had time to do 11 of them. All of them did quite well. I mean, I heard people getting takeaways from pretty much every talk that was given. Very high bar set every year. And, you know, this year with MicroConf, we actually pulled three speakers from attendee talks last year, Nathan Berry, Brennan Dunn, and Sherry Walling, and moved them into kind of the main stage speakers. So I could see that certainly being an option next year as well. One talk I wanted to call out is Dave Rodenbaugh's talk, which was titled How to Buy Your Way to Fame and Fortune as a Bootstrapper. And he basically talked about acquiring WordPress plugins, which is something that not a lot of folks have done. Not a lot of folks have, you know, acquired software because we all want to build it, but it was a very well-told story and obviously quite a big success for him. I think that was a good one. And Dave's just been, you know, he's been to all four MicroConfs, and we've encouraged him to do attendee talks in the past, so it was good to see him get up and share his knowledge to the crowd.
Yeah, I really liked how he tied that together and showed that not only was he acquiring things, but he acquired them and then showed kind of afterwards all the work and effort he did and put into it to make those products better. And 90% of it was really just the marketing side of stuff. He acquired a product that didn't have good marketing, and he turned that around and was able to essentially tell a great story to the customers such that they were able to buy a slightly tweaked but and slightly better product than it had previously done. But it already had a solid code base. It wasn't that the product was bad. It was that the marketing was bad. And he took that and he ran with it, and he built, you know, decent businesses out of these WordPress plugins.
And of the 11 attendee talks, two of them were about WordPress plugins. John Turner did his talk on how I built a six-figure WordPress plugin business while working a day job. And John actually still has his day job. He said it's low stress, and he, you know, really doesn't have any desire to leave. But he has the Coming Soon plugin, and I think there's one maintenance mode plugin as well. He just kind of walked through the whole story of kind of discovering the academy, basically. It was cool to hear his story, because I'd heard it through tweets and things here and there, but to actually hear it full on about how reading through the stuff in the Micropreneur Academy like changed his thinking to go niche, and that once he did that, things really picked up for him. And he's had 800,000 downloads from WordPress.org. He has a couple of plugins, and he had a theme online for a while that I think he took off. But I definitely enjoyed his story.
Yeah, I think the number of 800,000 downloads just kind of blew my mind. It's just like, wow, you know, that's a huge footprint, and it gives you a huge number of people to sell your product to. And he also talked a little bit about some of the pitfalls of dealing with that and how he was able to grow his business through interact with the WordPress ecosystem.
Another attendee talk that I got a lot of comments on was by Harry Hollander of MoreAware Software, and it was called Sales Calls Don't Need to Be Painful. What I liked about this is, you know, Harry's a developer. He's like us. He doesn't want to do sales calls, and he specifically called that out, and he said that their sales cycle used to be 6 to 12 months, and it would be 30 hours working with a customer to get them committed to using their software. They build software for countertop installers, and through just honing their questions and kind of figuring out a better process, they have moved that down to, I think it was 3 hours that they now spend with customers, and it's like a couple of weeks. So it's just an amazing story of like kind of iterating. I mean, they didn't split test in the traditional sense, but they really just tried a bunch of different things. And they basically boil it down to asking four questions of someone, you know, they're on a sales call with. And I don't remember the four questions. Do you?
there were four questions that the very first question was, what are you doing today? And the idea behind that question is they want to find out, in Harry's business, they have software that helps people schedule kitchen countertop installations. So their first question is, how do you schedule kitchen countertop installations today? And if their answer is we don't, that's kind of the end of the sales call. You don't need to go any further because their software and their product just can't help them. So that's a very good qualifying question. And then their follow-up questions, the second question is, you know, what works about that process? And the third question is, what doesn't work about that? The fourth question is, what will happen long-term if you don't change the way you're doing things? And Harry actually mentioned that that's a very good way for the customer to talk and get it out that they're essentially selling themselves on this new product that they're looking at because they know that they need to get off of their current system and this other product can help them, the product that MoreAware software provides. But the customer is essentially talking themselves into buying something to solve their pain point. You know, how much is it going to cost them if they don't switch? And that's really the bottom line, is they want the customer to talk. And he said that one of the really hard parts about this is to ask the question and then shut up. He said that's really, really hard to do.
Well, he said he's done almost 2,000 sales calls and that he pretty much knows there's only two different answers to the first question, as an example. So he knows what they're going to say before they say it, but he said that's not the point. You still have to ask it and you have to be quiet so that they can basically talk themselves into realizing how much value they're going to get out of your software. Last couple attendee talks that I like, one was from Ryan Delk. He's head of growth at Gumroad. And Gumroad is a service that helps folks sell products, like typically one-time downloadable. So a lot of info products, music. I think they have videos and you know movies and such. But a lot of info marketers are starting to use them. And they have seen thousands of launches, and so they have all kinds of data. And he was able to break out some really interesting things about like pricing. Now, he was saying that you should have tiered pricing and that it should be around 1x, 2.2x, and 5x. And those are the best numbers they've seen. So obviously, you know, if your 1x price is just for the ebook and it's $19, then 2.2 times that is around $40-45, and that should be your next tier. And then you go up about another 2.5 times that, you know, so you'd go up into like $90 or $99 range. And you obviously have to add more value to those higher ends. But he's saying that when people do that, that they get like another, I think it's an additional 62% of revenue. And, you know, there's just a substantial amount comes from that middle and that top tier. And that was just one of the things. I mean, there were like 6 or 7 points he dropped like that in the span of 12 minutes.
I think that the numbers that he showed were probably the best part of it because it was actual data about not just what you should do, but why you should do it and what the average results are from doing that. That was probably the most powerful part about it was just, as you said, they've got access to so much data and statistics. They can run those numbers and correlate them and provide them back to people and say, these are the things that are working and this is why you should do these things. This is going to be the results of those things.
And I think rounding us out for this episode is the attendee talk by Samuel Hulick. It was called UX Basics That Convert Users into Customers. And Samuel was actually my marketing intern that I had hired last year. And he's since then started useronboard.com, where he does a lot of onboarding critiques. And he's written a book. And actually, that was cool. He basically is giving the book away to everybody who attended MicroConf. We had a couple nice giveaways. I gave away my Startup VA course as well. But Samuel's talk, I thought was good. I love his Mario analogy, where he says that your customer is Mario. And your customer doesn't want the flower that they're going to capture. They want the result, which is turning into the large Mario that spits fireballs. And he has that analogy in his book as well. It definitely hit home with me because it makes you realize, like, of course, they don't want the product. They want what the product turns them into.
Yeah, I thought that was a really good analogy, partially because it demonstrated, like, for example, if you're the small Mario, there are certain attributes that the person has. They're maybe a little bit less apt to do things or take risks, but when they turn into Fireball Mario, it's just like, oh, you know, I'll take a hit. I don't really care. It's not going to do anything to me. It's not going to wreck my world because I've got this power behind me at this point, and I'm not going to die if I go down a wrong path. And it was very interesting to see that, you know, analogy, just because I think that most people don't necessarily realize that, you know, as you said, it's not about the product. It's kind of what the product turns you into.
So we did video all the talks, including the attendee talks. And as soon as we have those, they will be available in the Micropreneur Academy. It'll probably be a month or two. And then I'd imagine we'll make most of them available in about, 10 months as we're promoting the next one. And we'll be releasing those. We know we never released the attendee talks from last year in the pub to the public, so we should probably do that soon. I really wanted to thank the sponsors, the folks who have essentially allowed MicroConf to be possible. Kissmetrics sponsored this year, as well as Software Promotions of Balsamic, BidSketch and Cumbia returning sponsors, Constant Contact has sponsored several times, and UserHue, which is Lance Jones of Copy Hackers, was really cool. And they, UserHue actually gave us some Oculus Rift headsets to give away, three of them, and that was a big hit. Constant Contact also gave an iPad Air, so that was as a way to make the event memorable. It was cool.
Also, Software Promotions is working on a video course for SEO. I think it's called SEO Demystified, that they're giving a pretty sizable discount to all the MicroConf attendees. And it's Dave Collins who's behind that. And he does some really, really great work. So I would definitely take a look at that if you guys have an opportunity. It's coming out soon. I think he said that the target date was May 15th. But whenever it comes out, he's definitely going to make that discount available to all the MicroConf people.
So I think that kind of wraps up our takeaways from MicroConf Vegas 2014. If you're interested in perhaps hearing about MicroConf 2015, which is should be hopefully next April, head over to microconf.com, get your name on the mailing list. We sold out in around 20 minutes this year, so I don't know what next year is going to look like. Every year it seems to get about, it takes about 1/20th of the time, so hopefully it won't sell out in a minute next year. But we're also, as I said earlier, we're doing MicroConf Europe, and microconfeurope.com gets you there. We are putting together that mailing list as well.
If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.